This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacia. What to do with Silent Sam? Still not settled. The UNC leadership kept the public in the dark about their plans for the fallen Confederate monument. Last year, they handed it over to the Sons of Confederate Veterans, along with two payments totaling more than $2.5 million. Students claim university leaders and the SCV were working together the entire time on a plan to transfer ownership. I'm talking to Liz Schlemmer, WNC's education reporter, about this. So let's quickly take a look back at the timeline of events. A statue torn down in late 2018. When did the Sons of Confederate Veterans file their complaint?
That was on November 27th. And another point in this timeline, just before that, 4 days prior, the Sons of Confederate Veterans had signed an agreement with the United Daughters of Confederacy, who are commonly known to have helped erect the statue at UNC Chapel Hill. They made an agreement to transfer whatever property rights they had under the law to the Sons of Confederate Veterans. A couple days after that, the UNC Board of Governors met in a closed session. That night, the public found out that the UNC system had made a settlement with the Sons of Confederate Veterans for $2.5 million to transfer possession of the statue to the Sons, and also the money to be put in a trust fund to take care of the statue. Once everyone knew about that, the students, several students and a faculty member, got together and hired a civil rights law firm to seek to intervene in the case. When the judge met to hear that, he didn't accept their argument that they should become a party to the case, but he opened it up and said, I'm going to reconsider the settlement and for any interested parties to submit legal arguments for why the Sons of Confederate Veterans may not have had standing in their initial lawsuit against the UNC system. And that's the argument that the attorneys for these students are making. And then also we had 88 alumni, many early African-American graduates of the university and other prestigious alumni who came together and filed a brief, answered that call. And they and the attorneys for the students are arguing that the Sons of Confederate Veterans never owned the statue because the United Daughters of the Confederacy never owned the statue.
Yeah, there's a lot of steps in this. So I'm going to recap just a second, and then we can move forward. We've got this agreement that says we, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, agree to transfer ownership of this this monument to the Sons of the Confederacy, and we're going to pay them $2.5 million. They have sued us. They filed a lawsuit against us saying, it's ours. We need it back. It's fallen off its pedestal. Give it to us. They took a look at the lawsuit, did the UNC lawyers, and said, they're right. They're going to win. We'd better settle out of court. And so they do. And the out-of-court settlement includes transfer of ownership and $2.5 million to take care of it. That settlement occurs 7 minutes after the lawsuit was filed by the Sons of the Confederacy. So it leads to a lot of questions. Was there an agreement in the works long before this lawsuit had been filed? So that's the question, and should be done. We both agreed. Agreement, it's all over. And then students and faculty say, wait a minute, where did this come from? And now that's why this case is being reopened. Is that a rough summary?
I think so, but also the UNC system is saying that they believe that this would have been a very long fight, that the legal matters weren't clear, and that they had separate interests, and that's why they went into this settlement. But, students are questioning that.
Well, let's talk briefly about that, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Sons of Confederate Veterans and why they think they owned it, because the question is really, did they ever own it? And did they have a right to file a lawsuit? And there are some lawyers who are saying it's pretty darn clear that they didn't own it. What's their argument? What's the case they make?
Well, it stems back to the original United Daughters of the Confederacy. So there was a group started in 1897 who helped erect the statue in 1913. And the attorneys for the alumni hired a university historian, or she made an affidavit saying that she has looked at the historical record and that the original United Daughters of the Confederacy really only raised about a third of the money to erect the statue. And actually, the university president took on some of the fundraising efforts and raised through alumni 2/3 of the amount that money was always held by the university, and that original group of Daughters of the Confederacy, they were an unincorporated association. They couldn't own property. And then there's a question of whether or not there was really a transfer from the original Daughters of Confederacy to the current ones for them to be able to transfer it to the Sons.
And then the other question at stake here, what SCV claims is, they said the Daughters of the Confederacy, claim you can have it, but it must stand on the university in perpetuity. And that was part of the agreement. Of course, if they didn't own it, they couldn't make the agreement. But there's even a question about whether there is a formal agreement over whether it had to stay in perpetuity on the university's property in order for the gift to remain in university hands.
Right. The Sons of Confederate Veterans, in their original complaint, are saying that was a conditional gift from the United Daughters of Confederacy because of a speech that was made at the dedication. We've heard a lot about the speeches made at the dedication, but the this representative for the Daughters of Confederacy said that it should remain on campus forever. And attorneys for the students and the alumni are saying that's not the same as a contract, that unless there is a written agreement between the university and the United Daughters of the Confederacy, then it's not a conditional gift.
So with all of these legal questions surrounding it, you know, the question, the bigger political question is, why on earth did the university agree so quickly to this when there are so many at least potential legal holes in the SCV argument? So where are we now in the legal fight? Because you think, well, two parties have agreed, and for whatever the rationale, once they make the agreement, that's it. Where is that agreement now? What's happening?
So next week, there's going to be a hearing in which the judge is expected to look at all of these arguments, right? These four different parties or four different entities really submitted these briefs. But there are only two parties to the case, right? There's the UNC system and there's the Sons of Confederate Veterans. They both want the settlement to stand, but the judge is going to consider these other legal arguments from these friends of the court and decide, hopefully next week we'll hear something about whether or not the settlement is going to stand.
Interesting legal question about it, but apparently a judge can undo an agreement between two parties who would like it to stand. Apparently that's what's at stake here, right?
It is. And the UNC system attorneys are also arguing that this shouldn't have been reopened, that the only reason that you reopen a settlement like this is if the judge doesn't have jurisdiction. And they say the judge does. So they're questioning even why this would be looked at again. But he has agreed, the judge has agreed to really just consider whether or not the Sons of Confederate Veterans had standing in the case, whether or not they legally owned the statue when they filed a lawsuit against UNC.
Well, as the legal questions continue to swirl around the agreement to hand over Silent Sam to the Sons of Confederate Veterans, many deep political questions raised by the Board of Governors' handling of this issue. We know more now about the behind-the-scenes dealings between the BOG and SCV, thanks to a deep-diving investigation by the UNC Chapel Hill student newspaper, The Daily Tar Heel. And I'm joined now by Charlie McGee, Daily Tar Heel's Director of Investigations. Charlie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So we talked about the university settling for $2.5 million with the SCV, but your investigation takes a look at a smaller payment that happened a week before that settlement. Tell us about the nearly $75,000 payment that changed hands.
Right. Yeah. So the $2.5 million really grabbed a lot of public attention and were the only thing anybody knew about in terms of a financial transaction related to Silent Sam for nearly a month. December 16th, the Board of Governors, five members who had kind of been assigned as a Silent Sam committee about a year ago to sort of figure out what to do with this, they penned an op-ed and mentioned that we also paid $74,999 to the Sons of Confederate Veterans, odd number, and a lot of the speculation for that, the reasoning behind that is that $75,000 is the minimum amount for an agreement of some kind with public money that requires approval by the state's attorney general's office. So The stated purpose at the time of the deal was that it was an agreement for this, let's call $75,000 to the SCV for them to limit their activity and their display of Confederate symbolism on any UNC system property. This was also something that people just found weird on its face because it's a very hard to enforce rule. And the sort of reporting I've been doing and others at the Daily Tar Heel, it's been a great effort by the whole office, have been, you know, connecting with people who were close to these internal dealings. And so I kind of heard chatter and eventually got a pretty direct off-the-record confirmation from a source who I can really only call someone close to the Board of Governors, who told me that this $74,999 had become common knowledge amongst the board, although maybe not the whole board was involved in this negotiation, that $74,999 was not for the stated purpose, but instead for a payoff to the United Daughters of the Confederacy. The reason for that payoff is what most people have said is an incentive to the UDC to sign on to this transfer. That $74,999 transaction was made November 21st. The agreement between Sarah Powell, president of the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and Kevin Stone, the commander of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, to transfer Silent Sam happened 2 days after that payment, as it's signed on paper. And the only public documentation that was ever released of that transfer was an exhibit that was included with the verified complaint by the SCV, which just, you know, very flatly stated that Sarah Powell has signed it over. There was no money figure defined. And of course, as you guys have already discussed, the questions surrounding the UDC's actual claim to Silent Sam are pretty pertinent and still very much in the air. But all parties involved agreed on those claims and agreed on, you know, making them solidified. And so that confirming that was kind of tough. And I actually got my first confirmation from Frank Powell, who is a spokesperson for the Sons of Confederate Veterans. He's also the editor of their national magazine. And he's also the husband of Sarah Powell, the president of the United Daughters Confederacy in North Carolina. And I essentially asked him straight up, you know, did you guys, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, get this $75,000 and then pay it to the UDC? Or did the UNC system just pay it to the UDC directly for the Silent Sam transfer? He said the SCV paid the UDC, so the Sons paid the Daughters. I then called Boyd Sturgis, who was the attorney representing the Sons of Confederate Veterans for these negotiations, which, as you know, indicated by Kevin Stone in a private letter he wrote to members, was going on for months and months throughout all of 2019 almost. And the Boyd, I think, his name's Boyd Sturgis, he, I think, mixed up which documents were public and weren't when I called him. So I told him I was able to confirm this $74,999 was not actually for the stated purpose, but to allow the Sons to pay the Daughters for Silent Sam. He said, you know, very kind of, you know, flatly, like, yeah, that's the language and the verbiage in the agreement. You know, I have it right in front of me. I told him, you know, is that really... Really? Because I pulled up my, I mean, I'm scanning what I have again, and everybody I've talked to, you know, this is a huge question. He said, yeah, I got it in front of me, the 74, that was to pay the Daughters for their rights, yeah, title, and interest. And, you know, I asked him a couple follow-up questions, came back around to that, said, hey, can you send me that? He said, no, I actually, unfortunately, I can't do that. I think I'm going to have to hang up, but bye-bye, and hung up.
But this is fascinating. The Board of Governors is now telling us what appears to be a lie. It appears to be a lie that they were telling the public, we're doing this to keep them off campus. They have. We've got the documents now that show. We actually gave you this money, Sons, so that you could pay the Daughters for a transfer of ownership, and precisely that's the amount. Mm-hmm. We came one penny short, so we didn't have to tell the public.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So much of this has been done behind closed doors. And then, and that all happens 2 days later. And then within 7 minutes, a lawsuit is settled that's full of legal holes and arguments. And then the ultimate question, did the DAR, or did the Daughters, not DAR, Daughters of the Confederacy, actually own the thing? Mm-hmm. Did they have it to sell? It becomes the Brooklyn Bridge. But that's a mm-hmm. whole other kind of legal question. Mm-hmm. And so much of this is how much was done behind closed doors, right? Mm-hmm. How much you? So, are you still involved in this investigation? What else are you turning up?
Sure. Yeah. There's definitely ongoing things here, and I mean, there's a lot of remaining questions just from my reporting and this most recent story, which it's a complicated thing. It's something that, because it's not it hasn't been done transparently. And it also should be mentioned that the DTH Media Corps, the parent company of the Daily Tar Heel, is actually suing the UNC System Board of Governors. Being that we're an independent student newspaper, luxury that a lot of student newspapers don't have, we can kind of take actions like this. And it's based on the claims that, you know, the system and the Board of Governors violated these the open meetings law of the state in doing all these meetings kind of behind closed doors. But the questions that remain in terms of the actual dealings are, you know, who on the Board of Governors was knowledgeable of what was going on here, of this 74-999 in particular, you know, who came up with the ideas, you know, who crafted the actual, you know, strategy here, who was, how in touch was the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and, you know, at what point did the broader Board of Governors membership, you know, start to realize this? And it's, a lot of people are being tight-lipped still, but it's kind of a situation that's required a lot of gumshoe reporting up to this point. It's not traditional. It's a really good exercise, I think, in investigative reporting and coalescing a lot of different things from racial tensions and history and legal principles. And it's something that I'm still working on. And I think another question, of course, is, you know, how much did UNC Chapel Hill know as opposed to the Board of Governors? And the line right now is, you know, that they didn't and they weren't connected. And it appears by all indications that the meetings were done by the Board of Governors. But
thanks for all your work, Charlie.
Thank you.
Keep it up. Charlie McGee, Director of Investigations for the Daily Tar Heel. And we'll continue that conversation, I'm sure, in future episodes. Thanks so much for being with us.